Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening and welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters. Top Cat is stuck in a snowdrift somewhere, I think, but we're both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran, and we have got an outstanding show coming up for you. But we want to kick off by thanking some of the sponsors that help make the show possible, including the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, the Charlie Wilson Agency, AFS Foundation and Waterproofing Specialist, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Daphne's Hottest Place for Chow, which any place that's hot these days is good because we've got a cold front coming through. But the Waterfront Restaurant at One Yacht Club Drive, the Medicare Lady, Ms. Keisha Chambers, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And, of course, I want to thank all of our sponsors and you, our great listeners, because we could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And, of course, SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always join in the discussion on Facebook. And you can always check out scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information on the topics of the day. Coming up later on SBN, we'll speak with one of our sea lawyers from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Mr. Colin Kimberly himself. He will get us up to speed on the latest legal issues facing our veterans today. And, of course, Tom's tirade on 10 soldiers in Pedro's army, a very timely one. But first, it is great to be joined in SBN by Ms. Corey Gardner, the general manager of the Waterfront Restaurant in Daphne. Corey, thank you for joining us, and thank you and your crew for everything that you do for our veterans, military, and our first responders.
Thank you for having us on tonight.
Well, it's always great to have you on because there's always great things going on in the empire that is built, but especially there at the waterfront. So what do y'all have coming up here? We have Mardi Gras about to kick off, so big things going on.
Yeah, so Mardi Gras is a good time for us. A couple years ago, Pete and Nick came to me, and they were asking me for an idea of something to do during Mardi Gras. Do something for our community, and we came up with having a dog parade at the waterfront, and this will be our third year that we're doing it. It's called Joe Canine, kind of a play on Joe Kane. We do it the Saturday before Joe Kane Sunday, and it kicks off around 2 o'clock. We have live music, drink specials, food specials, and then we do a dog parade at 3 p.m. People come, sign up their dog. Pay a small entry fee to be in the parade, put them in a costume, and we get some judges out there, and we do a first, second, and third place prize for them, and we're raising money for the Baldwin County Humane Society. We do it through the PR Foundation, which is Pete's foundation that he has founded with one of his friends from culinary school, Robert, and they have their foundation. And one of the things we like to support is no-kill animal shelters. And so we raise money each year with this event for the Baldwin County Humane Society.
That is wonderful. So do you have like a group that comes and they're like the Merry Widows, like they have in the Cocaine Parade?
Not necessarily, but we have had a lot of repeat dogs. This will be our third year, like I said. And so I think pretty like 90% of the dogs that were in our first parade came out for last year's parade and the second parade. And we doubled actually the number of dogs. So we're hoping to, you know, keep growing that number just so that we can continue to raise money. We also do, the Baldwin County Humane Society brings out some dogs. So you can come out and adopt a dog if you'd like. Maybe if you don't have a dog yet and you, you know, we're looking for one, it's a great time. They normally bring about 10 dogs out there trying to find them good homes. So even if you don't have one of your own yet, you could possibly find your next friend.
Absolutely. And the shelter dogs, the one I have, or the one that claims me, I guess, came from the Humane Society. It's a great organization. You know, if you have time, money, resources to be able to assist those shelters, it's certainly a wonderful thing to do. And this sounds like a way to be able to support the shelter and have a great time as well.
Exactly. We also do them as our charity month for bingo. So all February long, every Monday night when we play bingo, all of the cards that are purchased to play bingo by the participants, the money goes straight to the Humane Society for the month of February as well. So even if you don't have a dog, lots of ways to participate. And of course, you can always just do a cash donation that we'll pass along to them too.
Great. Now, I know that it's every Monday, but what time does the bingo kick off?
Bingo starts at 6 o'clock. And I suggest getting there early to get the best seat. We took a little Christmas break and came back, not this past Monday, but the Monday before, and it was completely packed. Had to bring in extra tables, and then some people actually even didn't get to play because it was so full. So I suggest getting there early, but play starts at 6 p.m.
That is outstanding. And I know you pick a different charity each month. Is it each month that you pick a charity?
Yeah, different charity each month. Like this month, it's Big Brothers Big Sisters for the month of January, and then February will be the Baldwin County Humane Society. And we're in the process of mapping out the entire rest of the year on what charities we'll do each month.
That is outstanding. So again, you know, a great way to come out, have some fun, play a little bingo, get some good food. I obviously there are some wonderful adult libations that are available there while you're playing bingo. And then you get to do some good for the local community. So just a great way to spend a Monday evening. Now, I know it's supposed to be getting cold here over the next week, but you guys, that outside area, you got those big heaters out there, don't you?
Exactly. So even if it's cold outside, we've got several heaters out there that we can turn on, and people still are enjoying a great outdoor dining venue. And then obviously if it's too cold for you, the inside's always a great choice because the heat's always on inside.
There you go. And I know y'all are always coming up with, between Nick and all of the culinary geniuses over there, y'all are always coming up with unique dishes and new drinks and things like that. Are y'all have anything that y'all are rolling out anytime soon, or y'all are still back in the test kitchen?
We've actually been in the test kitchen this winter, and we are getting ready to do a menu update that's actually going to print next week. And we've got three new menu items that'll be hitting the menu. We're going to do some fried cornbread muffins that are going to be on the menu, an artichoke chicken, and a ribeye and shrimp combination. So adding some new stuff to it, keeping all the favorites that everyone loves and knows us for. Don't worry about that. That's all staying on there. We're just adding a few new things.
Wow. Now, the artichoke chicken, that sounds like something very interesting. Not to reveal any secrets, you're just going to have to come out to the restaurant and enjoy it. Now, when are you gonna? When will that roll out?
That'll be in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. So, all right. And real quick, what's the date and time on the Mardi Gras Dog Parade?
The Mardi Gras Dog Parade is February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. If you haven't pre-registered, we'll be doing registration on site that day at 2 p.m. and the parade starts at 5 and the party lasts till, I mean, the parade starts at 3, sorry, and the party lasts till 5.
That sounds great. Well, Tori, thank you so much for joining us again. Thank you and your crew for all that you do for the community. Come out, bring your dog, or if you don't have a dog, come get one.
Exactly.
You can, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to tell your wife or your significant other that you might be bringing home a pet. So,
a great Valentine's Day present for somebody.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. There you go. All right. Well, Corey, thank you so much. Hopefully we won't get anybody in trouble on the other side of the break.
Sounds good.
Colin Kimmerly from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, when we return on the Scuttlebutt.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network Radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. Transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And if you like to listen on demand, you can always catch our regularly aired shows via podcast. They'll be up on the FM Talk 106.5 app. And Tom's Tirade is up on castbox.fm. And it is always an honor to be joined on SBN by one of our legal eagles from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, the OG himself, Mr. Colin Kimmerly. Colin, welcome back to SBN, and thank you for your service to our veterans.
Thank you, Cal. It's a pleasure to be back with y'all.
It has been a while since we've had you on air. I know you've got a fantastic crew of attorneys there that also work with our veterans, and they do a fantastic job. But it's always great to have you come back on and give us a little bit of your advice. So I know we're kind of rolling back a few things here. We always try to find sort of the latest topics and issues that are out there, but sometimes it's good to go back to some of the basics. And right now you have a lot of folks that have children who are headed off back to college. I have two girls. They both just started over the last couple of weeks back in school at different universities. But how does all of that relate in terms of dependents, Colin? Give us some of the background there.
Okay, so let's talk about dependents, and it's a great topic. I'm glad you brought it up. I take a lot of phone calls from veterans who are just calling in to do the consultation before we represent them. And one of the things we talk about is dependent pay. Clearly, if you're a veteran and your combined rating evaluation is 30% or over, you're entitled to dependency pay. But for your spouse, also for your children of certain ages, we're going to get into that in a minute, and potentially for your parents. But I'm just amazed by the amount of veterans who call me who are actually over 30%, who have either a spouse or children and are not getting any dependency pay for them. I'm like, why are you not getting that? They said, well, I don't know anything about that. Well, in the VA, as we well know, you have to file a form, which is called the 21-686C to start with, to get dependency pay. And I tell everyone who is even initially filing for VA benefits, if you have a spouse, you have underage children or children that are in school up to age 23, you need to go ahead and just file the 686C just to start with so that the VA is put on notice that you have dependents. But with the children specifically, so if you're at 30% or above, you have children that are up to age 18, clearly they are entitled, or you're entitled to get dependency pay for that child. And then if they're up to age 23 and they continue to be in school, then you have to file a form showing that they're in school when they're above 18. That's the form 674. And basically you get it from the school, help with the help of the school, and you show that they're in school and you file that with the VA, and then you're entitled to continue the dependency pay at that point.
Now, quick question, Colin.
Sure.
That age 18, right. Most folks would think, okay, by age 18, my kid's going to be out of high school. And
right.
So they would be in college at that point, or I assume a trade school would qualify.
Yep. College for
but
sure.
But let's say you have, let's say you have, a child that, for whatever reason, doesn't graduate high school by 18. For whatever reason, they might have an early birthday, late birthday, they got held back. So if they don't hit that age 18 and move on to college, do you have to get something saying they're still in high school?
Yes, you would. My opinion is you would.
Okay.
They have to be in an approved school if they're over 18. Okay, so mm-hmm. You'd have to file that with the VA that they're still in a school, even if they're over 18. Yeah, and I can see what you're saying. If they're held back a year, and a lot of kids are, they're 19, they're not graduated from high school yet, or potentially even 20 nowadays. But, yeah, I would think you'd have to file the form just to continue the dependency payments.
Right. Well, and you do have, Carson Beck, who admitted he hasn't been to class in 2 years and he was still playing for the national championship. So, you never know what you have to file to stay in school these days.
And let's talk about just for a second, Chapter 35 benefits, which are different. I'm talking dependency pay if you're over 30%. Now, if you're 100% or TDIU and you're permanent in total and you have a child, that's different. That's a different, that's a different animal, for lack of a better word. I mean, you're getting Chapter 35 benefits where they're paying for their college education, and then you have to file for that, but you don't get dependency pay if they're getting Chapter 35. That's the difference. But you'd want to get if they're in college, you'd want to get the 35, believe me. I know you would, instead of the dependency pay, because that's a lot more money per year. So we have to be
Is that something that you can assist a veteran in determining what to apply for there?
Yeah. So if they're 100% and they have a child that's in college, they definitely want to file for the Chapter 35. That's for sure. And actually, okay. I was talking to one of my associates about this, and they're like, if you're in college, whatever you're in college, whether you have 100% or not, if you go to financial aid, there's usually a person at approved school designated as a veterans, to deal with VA and the veterans and their children, that kind of thing. So that's, you can get assistance. You should be able to get assistance from the school in making sure that you file the proper documentation to continue to get payment. So that's one of our things we can tell veterans to do.
Okay. Well, obviously, the first step is really to contact your office, obviously, to make sure they're getting what they need to in terms of the rating.
Right.
But then, your attorneys are skilled and will ask the right questions to make sure that they're able to maximize those benefits.
Right. And then, yes, absolutely, and including the dependency pay and making sure, if you have a child over 18, that you're still getting paid for them as you should under the law. Yes.
Great. So anything else on the dependence topic that you wanted to discuss this evening?
Well, the other thing, to be quite honest, is if you have a dependent payment and you get a divorce and you're no longer married, you need to notify VA. And you cannot imagine the amount of people I've run into who, whoops, I never notified the VA. So I didn't have a dependent. And now 10 years have passed. Well, when the VA finds out about your divorce, they're going to hit you with an overpayment. You do not want that, believe me. I've had all kind of issues with that. That's one thing, unfortunately, that you definitely need to let them know about your dependents, whatever they are, whether it's a divorced spouse or... I've had a few veterans who have actually gotten dependent payments for their parents because they're paying for all their parents. When the parents passed away, you need to let the VA... make sure the VA is aware of that also. Or on the life side, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Likewise, if you have a new child, you have to refile the form to get the child put on as a dependent if you're over the 30%. Or if you get married. I've had that happen too. And people have gotten married and they fail to notify VA and then they don't get paid. So it's just money. And the other thing is, if you get a new rating decision that puts you at 30, you need to make sure within the year that you declare all your dependents, because then that'll attach to the back pay or the retroactive pay to when you first had your effective date on the new rating decision, if that makes sense.
Yes, yes. Now, but let's say, you know, if you are in a situation, and we got about a minute left, so we may have to carry this over, Colin, if you can do that.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're in an appeal, let's say you're at 20%, you're in an appeal that would put you over the 30%. You still want to go ahead and file those dependent forms, even though you're not at 30%.
Absolutely. I mean, my advice would be if you file an original claim and you have a spouse and children, I'd file the dependency paperwork then. The earlier, the better. Absolutely.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, it's like voting in Chicago. You do it early and often, right?
Yes, yes. Because you want to make sure the VA is notified of that. So when they pull up the file, they notify that you have dependents. That's the easiest way to get it done. And of course, we do it. I've done it after people have gotten 30% and they realize, oh, I have a spouse and I have children. Well, we can file the dependency paperwork and get them paid.
Sounds good. Yeah, we are chatting with Colin Kimmerly from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly. And we'll have more with Colin on the other side of the break when we return to the Scuttlebutt.
Into the sun. Here they come, zooming to meet our thunder. Adam boys, give her the gun.
Hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us today on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters. Top Cat is off on a little R&R, but we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. And again, we want to thank the folks that helped make this show possible. The Battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, our sea lawyer, Colin Kimmerly, and all the folks at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly, AFS Foundation and Waterproofing Specialist, Miss Keisha Chambers, the Medicare lady, Daphne's Hottest Eatery, the waterfront restaurant at One Yacht Club Drive, the Charlie Wilson Agency, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And again, we're joined by Mr. Colin Kimmerly from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly. Colin, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, yes, good evening.
Real quick, I know we didn't do it before we closed out the last session, and we'll mention it again. But what are the contact points for folks if you have a veteran that wants to reach out to you?
Well, they can always reach us at our phone number, which is 251 343-1111 here in Mobile. Also on the web at www.gardberglaw, so that's GardBerglaw.com.
Great, great. And, you know, you guys, as you said, you know, there is no fee to do a consultation, and you do a fantastic job with doing that. And talking about a consultation, let's get back to the basics of filing a claim, Colin. I know it's, you know, we get into some of these, and we're going to appeal this and do this and file this, but what are the basics of filing a claim that veterans need to know?
Well, there's two things that I wanted to raise with that. So first off, if you're a veteran and you've never filed a claim before, then you have to, well, first off, all claims have to be filed on form. That is the rule at the VA now. It's been upheld by the court. So if you're going to file an original application for conditions you've never filed for, then that's going to be under what's called the 21-526EZ. And you can find these forms at www.va.gov. You can set up your own account. You can download the forms. You can complete the forms, and you can file them. So that would be an original application or original claim form, the 526EZ. And I want to add, never, ever, please do not pay someone to file that. It's free to file. You know, even if you screw it up or you think you screwed it up, you probably didn't. You just want to get it filed with the VA so they start looking at the claim. That's number one. And you can do that. If you file a claim, VA will issue a rating decision on whatever you file. It may not be what you want, but that's the situation where you would call an attorney or representative to help you with it. But they will issue something. So that's the original. Now, here's where I get into the other part of this. So I get phone calls, and I just had one last week with somebody who said, I've never filed before. I want to file a claim. I said, okay, let's take a look at this. Let's get your claims filed from the VA. Let's look at your records. I did look at this person's record, and they actually had filed, although they forgot all about it, back in 2008. They had forgotten they had ever filed at all. So they already had issues that had been decided at one point by the VA. Well, if that's true, then at that point, you're going to need to file what's called a supplemental claim application, which again is form 20-0995, because what you're going to need to do is provide new evidence, new and relevant evidence, but new evidence to file a claim for a condition you've already filed for. So those are the two ways to get started on any kind of VA claim. Those are the two avenues. And it's important to know that you have to fill out a form. And if you file file a 21-526, and you list a condition you've already had adjudicated, VA will send you a letter saying, no, you filed on the wrong form. You've already filed for this. You need to refile on a different form. And so at that point, you need to go back and say, you know, I need some new evidence. And new evidence can be anything from medical records that show that the condition is continuing or worse or whatever it is, or you need a statement, you know, about why you think that you should be service-connected for whatever condition you're filing for.
Okay. Now, let's say that was the situation. Could it be, say, an affidavit from somebody that you served with saying, here's what we saw, here's what occurred?
Yes. Those are buddy statements. Absolutely. Buddy statements are great. If you can get buddy statements from the people that you served with saying, you know, I witnessed this, I saw this, and try to be descriptive. I sort of describe it as a video camera. I mean, you don't want to say, you know, I felt that he was suffering from pain. You can say, hey, I saw, you know, the person walk and they had trouble walking. They couldn't walk more than 20 feet because they were doubling over in pain. That's the kind of descriptive statements that you want to get if you can get a statement from a buddy, whatever it is. But whatever you can get, you know, as bad as it might be, that's the kind of stuff you want to file if you have to get new and additional evidence, new and relevant evidence.
Okay. Now, what about medical records? You know, when I was in the service, one of the things they said is when you are discharged, make sure you get a copy, a hard copy of your medical records for your time in service. Is that still the case?
Yes, I would recommend that if you can do that. And I think we would agree that's easier for more recent veterans. As for the older veterans, it wasn't so easy for them to do that. But nowadays, my understanding is that you can get a complete copy of your medical records. You definitely want to do that. And if you get a complete copy of your medical records now and you have conditions that you feel that are that you need to file for, please file for those immediately. It's easier to do it the sooner you get out of service. It gets harder the longer it is. But with medical evidence, one of the things the VA is always going to look at is all the medical evidence. I mean, if you're filing for something today, if you had a back condition back in the 80s and you're going to file today, they're going to be looking for what is his back condition now. That's going to be number one. Even going backwards, they're going to look at what's going on right now. Is he being treated? Is he being diagnosed? He or she, you know, they have a diagnosis. Do they have treatment? What does the doctor say? I mean, I am always looking for medical records for all my veterans. I mean, you know, unfortunately, if you're the stoic type of individual who doesn't go to the doctor, you may get some disability benefits from the VA, but it's much easier to get them if we do have a medical trail where we can supply medical records to the VA for them to review.
Okay, just to follow up on that real quick, let's say you have gone to the doctor, and the VA knows this, and the doctor says, you know, look, the best I can do, I can't do anything more. I might be able to give you a shot every now and then, but the next step is it's just going to become so unbearable. We're just going to have to do a shoulder replacement, you know, a total replacement.
Right.
And so in a situation like that, you know, the doctor said, there's really not anything else I can do. You know, so you're not necessarily going to seek ongoing treatment because the doctor's told you there's not anything else they can do.
Right. So at that point, you're looking at the condition, whatever it is, shoulder, back, knee, whatever. You're going to look at the diagnostic code that's attached to that condition. And we're assuming... Let's start off by just assuming you're already service-connected. That's the easiest way to do that.
Right.
Let's say you're going for an increased rating. You want to get a higher rating. So you have to look at the diagnostic code and see what the parameters are for the next rating up or the next two rating up, however you get. So you look at that and you say, okay, the doctor says they're done. This is all they can do until they operate. We don't want them to operate. You know. So can you get a higher rating? Particularly, yes. You know, you might be able to get an extra scheduler rating if you provide enough evidence to support that the overall condition would, you know, warrant a higher rating. You can get a higher rating, but that would be an extra scheduler argument that should be made by your representative and you as a veteran. And then it's going to be up to either the rater at the agency or, more likely in that situation, if you go on for extra scheduler, you're probably going to end up in front of a judge. Ask the judge to take a look at it, a veterans law judge to take a look at it.
Right. Well, Colin, thank you so much for the information. Great to have you back on again. What's the phone number for folks to reach out to you?
Yes, sir. It's 251-343-1111. Please give us a call.
Great. Sounds great, Colin. Thank you so much. We look
thank
forward
you,
to
Cal.
Having you back on again soon.
Thank you, sir.
And on the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on 10 soldiers and Pedro's army. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around. Pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
The year was 1970. The social fabric of the United States was in tatters, with radical leftist groups coming together to protest just about everything from the Vietnam War to civil rights to the AMC Gremlin, the Chevy Vega, and the Ford Pinto. Most of the protests were peaceful until Pintos started blowing up on impact. Anti-American socialists and communist agitators, including groups like the Weathermen, the Students for a Democratic Society, the Youth International Party, the Black Panthers, and others were fomenting violence throughout the nation, much of it on our college campuses. Law enforcement officers and buildings were attacked with impunity. Surprisingly enough, the nation's heartland was not immune from the unrest of the day. Kent State University in Kent, Ohio, might seem like the unlikeliest location for left-wing anti-American protests, but civil unrest at the university began as far back as 1966. It escalated in 1968 when the Students for a Democratic Society, or SDS, and Black United Students staged a sit-in to protest police recruiters on campus. You think defund the police was a new concept in 2020? This is an old anarchist playbook. Result: no one was punished. Instead, 250 Black students walked off campus in a successful amnesty bid for the protesters. Sound familiar? April 1st, 1969, SDS members attempted to enter the administration building where they clashed with police. April the 16th, a disciplinary hearing involving two protesters resulted in a confrontation between supporters and opponents of SDS. The Ohio State Highway Patrol was called, and 58 people were arrested. April the 10th, 1970, Jerry Rubin, a leader of the Youth International Party, also known as the Yippies, spoke on campus and said, quote,
"The first part of the Yippie program is to kill your parent. They are the first oppressors."
Peaceful protesters. 2 weeks after that, Bill Arthrell, an SDS member and former student, distributed flyers to an event where he said he was going to napalm a dog at an anti-napalm teach-in. PETA would be so proud. April the 30th. President Nixon announced a U.S. incursion into Cambodia that became the catalyst for increasingly violent gatherings. May the 1st, two peaceful daytime protests were held on campus, but an unknown protester posted a sign on a tree reading, quote,
"Why is the ROTC building still standing?"
My mama always said nothing good ever happened after midnight, and she was right. In downtown Kent that night, people left a bar and began throwing beer bottles at police cars, injuring five police officers and breaking several windows in a downtown storefront. The riot quickly escalated into vandalism, prompting an order to close all the bars, and police deployed tear gas to force the rioters back to campus. The National Guard was called in the next day, but by the time they arrived, the ROTC building was burned to the ground. According to an after-action report, quote,
"Information developed by an FBI investigation of the ROTC building fire indicates that, of course, those who participated actively, a significant portion weren't Kent State students. There's also evidence to suggest that the burning was planned beforehand. Railroad flares, a machete, and ice picks are not customarily carried to peaceful rallies."
Sound familiar? The daylight hours of Sunday, May the 3rd, were mainly peaceful, but a gathering of protesters that evening forced the guard to dispense tear gas to disperse the crowd. May the 4th, violating a ban from the university, about 3,000 protesters gathered on campus. The guard was already present. Around noon, the crowd was ordered to disperse by the guard and campus police. Instead of complying, they began to pelt the guardsmen with rocks and even throwing tear gas canisters back at the guard. Tensions continued to rise with the guard pushing forward to remove protesters amidst a hail of rocks. An officer fired a handgun into the air, and the guardsmen began to retreat up a hill. Protesters on the hill parted to let them pass, but those who had previously withdrawn moved on the guard, pelting them with rocks as they retreated. As the guard crested the hill, they turned and fired on the crowd. The aftermath of the shots has been captured in photographs that are shocking even today. Four students lay dead and nine were injured. The nation was outraged, but a majority blamed the students for the incident. Nonetheless, the shooting at Kent State and a subsequent shooting of two Black students at Jackson State University in May gave rise to an unprecedented surge in anti-war activism throughout the nation. Many credit this movement as the beginning of the end of the Vietnam War. As with so many progressive movements throughout the history, the leadership was more than happy to sacrifice a few of their foot soldiers in order to further their cause. Think St. George Floyd and the ensuing BLM riots of 2020, which led to defund the police and the rise of the unchecked criminal left. Now, you may be thinking Top Cat for the history lesson, but also wondering why. Well, as I write this, the City of Angels is burning under an assault by today's anti-American leftists, except now the rioters include criminal illegal aliens waving Mexican flags. Illegals allowed into the country by the Biden-Harris open border policy and coddled by the sanctuary policies of states like California and cities such as L.A. What began as an attempt to obstruct ICE agents and federal officers from doing their job by removing the worst criminal illegals from our streets has grown into a full-blown riot, bordering on insurrection in the streets of L.A. The videos of federal officers being pelted with rocks, bottles, unknown liquids, and even high-powered fireworks highlight the fact that these protests were hardly meant to be peaceful. Those carrying signs saying kill ICE and spray painting the same around the Metropolitan Detention Center where they think the illegals are being held believe that chaos and killing is the path to taking over our nation. There are no spontaneous protests. They are all organized riots. Just look at the video of the California Highway Patrol vehicles being firebombed from rioters on an overpass where the California Highway Patrol attempted to take cover. Just as the protests at Kent State were found to be planned, remember, who carries a railroad stake, railroad flares, and machete to a peaceful rally? Evidence indicates that many of the rioters have come prepared to inflict harm to law enforcement and destroy property. In response to the attacks on federal officers and the lack of support from the mayor of L.A., the L.A. police, and Governor Brill Creme, President Trump has deployed the National Guard to protect federal law enforcement and property. He has said that the Marines at Camp Pendleton are on standby to reinforce the feds if needed. Since the riots began on Friday, they have grown and become more violent, with thousands riding in the streets, many carrying Mexican flags, most covering their faces in order to mask their identities. In some of the most disturbing images, these criminals who broke laws to come into this nation, expressed their appreciation by burning and spitting on American flags. And as L.A. burns, the politicians who failed to protect their citizens, Governor Vitalis and Mayor Halfash, refused to condemn the violent criminal alien rioters. Instead, they focused their blame on President Trump, sending in the National Guard. Jedi mind trick. There was nothing to see here until the Guard showed up. These aren't the illegals you're looking for. Undoubtedly, President Trump did not take this action lightly or without careful consideration and ample advice. This is not his first rodeo. Remember, during the Summer of Love and the BLM riots, many of the nation's largest cities were burned and looted by, no doubt, many of the same rioters that now roam the streets of L.A. today. At the time, Trump waited for a call from state officials to call up the Guard, costing billions in property losses and damage and dozens of lives. Remember, Tampon Tim opened his windows to take in the smell of Minneapolis burning. In light of that, the president has chosen to get ahead of the rioters by proactively deploying the Guard and possibly the Marines. President Trump promised to remove these criminal illegals to keep our streets safe, and his actions are a promise kept. I believe he is correct in doing so. I also believe that the leftist organization of the riots will continue to ramp up their attacks on law enforcement and that the rioters will undoubtedly spread to other cities run by the Democratic Communists in an attempt to create a new summer of love. It was part of their playbook in 1970 and in 2020, and they are seizing on this moment to, as they say, burn it to the ground. The communists need chaos to advance their agenda, and as we have seen in the past, they are willing to sacrifice their own to achieve their goals. And while I have no love for these scumbag illegals, my hope is that law and order can prevail quickly and peacefully. The communist left is looking to turn this into today's Kent State, blame President Trump for the consequences of their own failed policies, and continue to drag the nation into a progressive morass. Hopefully, the Trump administration will be successful in their efforts to restore peace on the streets of L.A. without bloodshed on either side and continue to move America forward. Our children's future hangs in the balance. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. Just a thought. Don't try that shit down here.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Hold up, sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, yeah!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Even though Tom is not here, his wisdom and his thoughts extend to the current situation that we're looking at. But that's going to bring us to the close of tonight's edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We will catch you on the other side. Hoorah!